Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off and running for the second broadcast of 2017. It is the third day of January, 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump into the chat room and join in the merrymaking that takes place there during the 3 hours of live broadcasting each Monday through Friday, you know, when I'm not out sick and stupid stuff like that. There you will be met by Anatole Barkway, Don from Central PA, Hoghead, Jug of Punch, and VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, nope, didn't fold space today. And you'll be mighty welcome for all the fun and carrying on and madcap, zany, wacky, multimedia, real-time extravaganza-ing that happens there. Yep. So, feel free. Pick out a screen name, a password, and go in, and you will be, you'll be like family. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And, well, you know where that comes from. You remember. It was many years ago when our buddy Jim tuned into right-wing radio in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, where he heard a caller to the morning right-wing blather show hosted by America's most stentorian monotone. The caller said, Steve, how come it is you reckon there ain't no seashells in West Virginia? Or how come you say seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the beach. We ain't supposed to have no seashells. To which Steve replied, well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Although there's probably a little more emotion in the way I put it than it. Titanic plates. Still no word on the Titanic egg separator. Nope. A lot of stuff on the Titanic table. And so we celebrate right-wing idiocy, Titanic intellect on Titanic Tuesdays. Although there was a bit of there's a bit of new information out about the Titanic disaster. I don't know if you saw this or not. It turns out that driving the ship full on into an iceberg may not have been the sole cause of the great gaping gash that allowed the unsinkable Titanic to sink real good. And, of course, this would, if what is being posited as theory is true, then it's going to put a real hole in that terribly, terribly romantic James Cameron movie. You remember the one where Leonardo DiCaprio's in the frozen North Atlantic water saying, Rose, I'd sure like to get up on that floating door with you. And she says, oh, no, I'm sorry, Jack. There's only room up here for me, but I'll always remember you. My heart will go on. Mm-hmm. because the nature of capitalism is to abuse the people who work in it, it turns out that there were horrible, horrible, horrible mistakes made in the building of the Titanic. Oh, I know. Bob, this has nothing to do with the crisis that we face. Yeah, let's take a minute. No, there were, you know, the people who were building the ship were, of course, abused. They're in, what, Belfast? Just, you know, abused working folk. And along the way, a fire.
Huh?
Yeah, a fire broke out in one of the coal bunkers. It was not necessarily known about for a while. And then by the time that it was discovered, it just kind of had to burn itself out. But the fire was so bad that when they pulled into the, when they brought the Titanic into the slips at Southampton to take on passengers, they had to back it in so that the passengers entering on one side of the ship would not see the great goddamn big burn marks on the other side of the ship. And as you may know, if you apply sufficient heat, say 1,000 degrees or more, which this fire was, if you to steel stops being quite the really, really strong material that it otherwise is. And so when it hit the iceberg, it was more like, peanut brittle hitting the iceberg than, say, really, really high quality ship seagoing worthy steel. Yeah. So I thought that would bear mentioning. This is, of course, a listener supported broadcast operation. We operate on a shoestring and try to raise $200 every evening. We do it mainly, we do it entirely through two methods. One is the contribute button at headonradionetwork.com, which will take you to the PayPal interface where, you know, you fill out your data if you'd like. You're more than welcome, and we certainly do thank you for clicking that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation, because when you do that, you stand in the gap for the times when we don't meet our nightly fundraising goal. But even if you don't, you just put the amount in the box, and you don't fill out the part about what you do, who you do it for, where you do it, why you do it. You never mind anything about Mr. Spacely, and you just get to the next screen. And there you can make decisions about credit cards or PayPal, et cetera, and just, you know, get to the next screen. So that's how that works. And, you know, we pulled up a little short last night. We ended the program $40 short, and this is what it means to have subscribers. Thanks go out to John and Janice and Ron and Greg and Terry, all of whom helped us fill that shortfall so that we didn't come into this evening with a hole in the funding fundraising. So all we've got is our regular $200. But last night I was kind of after missing one night from playing hooky and two nights from being sick, I was just sort of focused on getting everything going and getting on the air, and I neglected something. I neglected a horn tradition, and shame upon me for doing so. So tonight, instead of last night, is Shirley's challenge. Shirley begins every month with a $200 challenge, matching the $200, matching $200 if $200 comes in that evening. Like clockwork, every month, month after month after month after month. So Shirley's challenge is on the table this evening. $200 comes in, it'll get doubled. It's just that easy. 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12.50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13. And we'll just apply the overage from where we round up from that half penny from 12 and a half to 13. We'll put that on Agnes's masseur bill. Okay? Right. Okay. Okay, so Anatole's telling me that TuneIn is playing yesterday's show. Let me know if you're having any problems with the program, because we are live on this, the third day of January, 2017. For those of you who prefer to use the United States Postal Service, Bossman Wayne loves it when he can get mail, and he'll leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck and just carry a nice nine iron with him in case he runs into the exalted Grand Dragon of the Klan while he's there at the UPS store. But our mailing address is The Horn, because they get their mail there too. The Klan does, because UPS sees nothing wrong with doing business with the Klan. You know, it's just business. Business of America is business, and that applies to UPS as well. Anyway, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV25801. And again, if you're going to do that, you can always shoot me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I can give Boss Man Wayne a heads up. Okay? Okay, I'm getting some confirmations. Steve in New York and Carol Baker both say they're getting the live program on TuneIn. So, that's a weight off my mind. It's nothing quite like worrying about where the damn stream is when you're trying to get a live program out. It really just sucks away a lot of the energy there. So that's all the shilly-shallying we have to do at the beginning of the program. Where to start this evening? Well, this is pretty Titanic. I mean, you want to talk about Titanic intellect, we had a great big building full of them today. Because today was New Congress Day in Washington, D.C. Hey, you remember all those stories that floated around there for a couple of weeks about how there was going to be that sort of interregnum space where Joe Biden could work to make Merrick Garland to give him his seat on the Supreme Court? Yeah, that didn't happen. Just like the Hamilton electors didn't happen. Because there are still a lot of people in this country who think, oh, well, you know, I mean, it's just how the system works. I mean, we're going to have peaceful transfer of power, and right? And you know, for the people in Congress who work 126 days a year and get the world's best benefits package for doing it and a whopping great goddamn big salary into the bargain, well, the check keeps clearing. And as long as the check clears, at the end of the day, that's kind of what matters. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean? So we got us a brand new Congress now. Oh, joy. Now, when you get yourself a brand new Congress, even if it is stocked with a gang of religious zealots, poltroons, ne'er-do-wells, cut-purses, thieves, backstabbers, and highwaymen and women, in other words, if it's a Republican Congress, they still have to have rules to operate by. Yes. And today, the first thing they did was to pass a resolution, a budget resolution. This is important. A budget resolution that includes something called reconciliation instructions. I know. Up until today, there were a whole people who were, those brave Democrats will certainly filibuster any attempt to repeal Obamacare. I mean, they just have to, don't they? Well, guess what? I mean, you really didn't put any faith in that, did you? Or did you? Like with the Hamilton electors and everything. Well, the reconciliation instructions introduced by Senate Budget Committee Chair Mike Enzi of Wyoming, because Wyoming gets two senators just like California does, and it's baked into the Constitution, and you can't do a damn thing about that without wrecking the whole document. So there are cattle in Wyoming who have more representation than human beings in California, really. Well, the reconciliation instructions introduced by Senator Mike Enzi and which have been approved makes it possible for the Senate to repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act with nothing more than a bare majority vote. You heard me right. So we're not going to have any of that fool, all that filibustering and killing bills and stuff. That's something up with which Mitch McConnell will not put. We're not going to have a bunch of 60 vote sissy thresholds for things like taking health care away from a few tens of millions of Americans. Oh, hell no. It's just going to take 50 out of 52 Republican senators. Uh-huh. And even if you lose two, let's say they lose three and they've only got 49 votes to repeal Obamacare. Well, that's what Joe Manchin's for. Bingo. Goodbye, Obamacare. So, when they pass a budget resolution that includes the reconciliation instructions, that means that the resolution will go through the budget reconciliation process, which means no need for a 60-vote majority. Just 49 Republicans plus Joe Manchin. Just 50 Republicans. Mm-hmm. And of course, it only takes any kind of simple, and God knows I mean simple, majority in the House of Representatives, where they're busily picking their teeth with their toenail clippings. And here's the fun part: the Wall Street Journal's reporting that the budget resolution could be passed by both houses as early as next week. Uh-huh. Now, that doesn't mean the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act will be repealed next week. It just means that that as of next week, the pistol's hammer is cocked and it's pointed at the heads of America, and that the Republicans in the Congress can pull the trigger anytime they feel like it.
Lovely.
And of course, you know what my position is on this. My position is that they don't give a damn. I participated briefly in a little tiny discussion on Twitter last night with Carolee, and pointed out that, you know, she said there'll be a terrible price for the Republicans to pay if they repeal Obamacare. My response: they don't care. It'll be listen to the highfalutin, well-paid punditry. Then the pundit, yeah, it's a very complex bill, Obamacare is. I mean, it's going to several, a couple of thousand pages there. I mean, of course, I mean, fat dead Tony Scalia said it was too much to even have to read. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. And I mean, you got to go through and find the stuff you like and stuff you don't like. I mean, there's stuff in there Republicans like. I mean, there's stuff in there that Republicans... I mean, goddamn, there's places in West Virginia and Kentucky that are 92% Republican that where people are having health care for the first times in their lives and they're worried about losing their health care, damn it, and don't care. Don't care. And there is no price to be paid, as Labor Man just pointed out in the chat room. Those jagoffs will vote for him again. That's right. That's right. I mean, remember how everybody talked about, oh, there was a terrible price to be paid for the impeachment of Bill Clinton? I'm still trying, and you'll find people who say, oh, yes, and they paid a terrible price for impeaching Bill Clinton. When, where, how, why? Because I don't remember any terrible prices being paid. Do you? I seem to recall that we got, despite the will of the voters, I know, we've been through that again, but 16 years ago, after the Republicans spent years chasing the cleanest and being obsessed with cigars and blue dresses and pizza and, right, they impeached Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton whipped their ass, and you know, after the impeachment, he had a higher approval rating than before the impeachment. So I get all that. Oh, but there was a terrible price to be paid. Well, we got George W. Bush. It was a terrible price, but that wasn't one that the... No. No. And as I recall, the House maintained its majority. And, there was some back and forth. And I remember Jim Jeffords and... Maybe the Senate was in the hands of Democrats for a couple of years. Terrible price to be paid. I don't know where people come up with these ideas. The Republicans are going to repeal the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. I will be happy to be proven wrong, and there will be no price to be paid. All those people who have health care now, well... I was kind of getting used to being able to go to the doctor when I was sick. But I reckon if the Lord would have wanted me to have it, the Republicans wouldn't have repealed it. Because remember, there is a way to do this. It's very simple. It's one sentence. One sentence bills are freaking awesome. The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act be and is hereby repealed. Boom. Done. Passed by both houses. I mean, it's a one-sentence bill. You're not going to need a goddamn conference committee. Pass, send it to... Send it up to the orange guy with the purple crayon. Any problem with that? I mean, there's lots of problems with that. But, you know, it's not like there's going to be an uprising in the Stan states, in the Confederacy. There's not going to be an uprising in Missouri or Idaho. There's not going to be an uprising in Wisconsin. Because working poor people there never got a chance at the Medicaid expansion because various and sundry Republican governors kept them from having access to it, which was why John Roberts crushed the mandatory expansion of Medicaid as contained in the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. So they're not going to get out in the streets. And really, you think a bunch of sick poor people in Appalachia are going to get out in the streets over this? And then 2018 is going to roll around And, oh, I don't know, somebody here in West Virginia in my congressional district will run against a little punk ass by the name of Evan Jenkins, and he'll say, that man voted to take your health care away. And Evan Jenkins will have about $1 billion behind him, and he'll run ads saying, I only voted to take away Obamacare because it was killing the America that we love because it was done give to us by a nigger. And besides, what do you need with health care when you've got Jesus? Ta-da! I mean, if I got this wrong, if I do, tell me. If the Republican majorities in both houses are going to sit there and say, well, you know, we certainly like the fact that we like the fact that the youngsters can stay on their mammy's and pappy's insurance until they're 26 years old. But I mean, ain't that just a little bit too mollycoddling? Shouldn't we take them off the tit before then? Get out there, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, damn it. Now, individual states that have a degree of enlightenment to them, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, maybe Minnesota, New York, they may try to do something for the people who get screwed, but they're not going to be able to do much because they're individual petty states, little petty sovereign nations. And the Republicans don't have the attention to detail to sit and worry over the contents of the act. They save attention to detail for things like bills about potties and who can pick out China patterns and that sort of thing. Michael in Madison says, subject line, no price to be paid. The GOP voters will be relentlessly told that the ACA had to be repealed because it was not working. Sorry, not sorry if you lost your health care, but the blame rests with Obama. And the GOP voters will say, oh, shucks, damn, they're right. Fuck that Obama. He took away my health care. Glad he's gone. In the chat room, Anatole says, I think all the left coast states will secede and form Cascadia. Well, yeah, except for no. Can't be done. That's right. Third day of January, 2017. Pretty soon we're going to change this, the name of the program, to Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Fucking Sunshine. Because I don't know how you feel about this, but it doesn't feel so good. Steve in New York says, here's what's really sick. They'll use that budget reconciliation resolution to blackmail the Democrats into not filibustering bills the rules would normally allow them to filibuster. Yeah, just toss it into budget reconciliation. Can't filibuster that. Yeah. Oh, hey, this just in from CNN. Headline, Bill Hillary Clinton to attend Trump inauguration. That's the headline. The body of the story says, former President George W. Bush and former First Lady Laura Bush will also attend, the 43rd President's office said in a statement Tuesday. They are, Mr. and Mrs. Bush are pleased to be able to witness the peaceful transfer of power, a hallmark of American democracy, and swearing in of President Trump and Vice President Pence. You know why they're going to be there? Jimmy Carter kind of shamed them into it. Because Jimmy Carter is the last manifestation of real and genuine decency we have left in this country. At the time, he was the only living president who said he would show up. And it was beginning, you know, the rest of the club were beginning to squirm a little bit. And, oh, God damn it, Hills. Look, honey, we gotta go. I mean, we'll have good seats and everything. I mean, come on. Pappy Bush won't be attending because Pappy Bush is not a particularly well man. So, yeah. Look, they're ex-presidents. I mean, except Hillary. So I guess it would seem to be kind of shitty and vindictive for them not to show up. Well, that and hopefully that way they'll all stay off the proscription list when Trump starts sending the bully boys around. So at least with a new Congress, they're so big. Now, bear in mind, they're not stupid. They're not going to pass the Obamacare repeal with Obama still in the White House, because he would get a real giggle out of vetoing it one last time. I still say he and Joe should have quit. Walked away and said, "Hey, Paul Ryan, you're president. It's all yours. Knock yourself out. Now that you're president, are you sure that you want Benito Cheeto to take the job? Huh? It's kind of cool, isn't it? But at this point in time, the official structure type people, well, they really do believe that somehow or another, and I don't know how, somehow or another, that there can be something resembling normal out of all of this. Me, not so much. Because, like I said, The political class inside the Beltway, their checks are going to continue to clear. Just like even when they shut down the government, the actual members of Congress's checks keep coming. Mm-hmm. Let's see. 17 days. 17 days. And of course, I was all ready to hot up the mic this evening and just talk about this business of gutting the Office of Congressional Ethics, because the House was well on the way to doing that, too. But then all of a sudden, a whole lot of people got pissed off about it. And lo and behold, even the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini tweeted that this was the wrong time to do that. Ixnay on the utgay, itray aunay. Aintway, ilte, the oobsray, ain't achingway. Mm-hmm. Notes coming in. Keith says, subject line, "Let's make a deal." This is sounding like a bad episode of Let's Make a Deal. I say take door number three. Door number one is already a zoink. Oh, Keith. It's zoink all the way down. How do I begin to explain that? Well, I don't have to explain that. Don in PA says, on the subject line, "A little ray of sunshine. Back when I was working, one of my fellow programmers asked me why I was always so bitter and cynical about things. My response was that I prefer to think of it as having a pretty fucking good grasp of reality." Which does kind of, it feels like that, doesn't it? Steve in New York, subject line, shitty and vindictive not to show up. Yeah, and? Oh, look. If Hillary hadn't showed up for Benito's syphilitic inauguration, they would have dragged her there, strapped her into a chair, and put those eyelid-keeping-open nightmare thingies on her eyes like something out of Clockwork Orange so that she couldn't even blink. They'd just have to lean over her and put a few eye drops in from time to time to keep them from drying up and falling out of their sockets while she watched, you know, the tiny-handed sexual predator take the oath of office that he has no intention of keeping. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, notes, why Chicken Noodle News reported in a great big fucking headlines that they stopped it because Trump tweeted. Seriously? Leadership in 140 characters or less? I know. Yeah, that was it. That's why they didn't gut the Office of Congressional Ethics. No. But we do know why they wanted to. I ran across, and maybe this is what we'll spend Titanic Tuesday on. No, I mean, this sort of thing. I ran across an article earlier today. All about how there was this big old passel, and this is back in 2013, big old passel of members of Congress. Now, let's see, how can I make this work best, cohesively? It was a big old passel of Congress critters. And there's this state-owned oil company in Azerbaijan. All I have to do is say oil company and Congress critters, and you pretty much, the script writes itself, doesn't it? You know, I do these little things, and I'm so proud when they get picked up on. We got a little cowbell for Brother Deacon Asa. Like something out of Clockwork Orange. I see what you did there, Bob. Clockwork Orange? Huh? Anybody? Yeah. It's nice to be appreciated. But anyway, over in Azerbaijan, there's this state-owned oil company. And they had this deal for a pipeline. Jesus Christ, everything's got a pipeline. And it was a pipeline that was going to run from Iran through the Caspian Sea Basin and provide natural gas through Turkey to Europe in order to make Russian, in order to take a little bit of the Russian stranglehold away from the natural gas supply to said Europe. Again, back in 2013. So the state-owned oil company there gave some $750,000 to a couple of phony baloney, rubed-up, faked-up, frauded-up, ginned-up, dummied-up, Carnival Midway nonprofits who then organized a shindig in Baku, Azerbaijan. And I guess Baku is kind of a place to see in Central Asia, situated there on the shores of the Caspian Sea, the old Central Asian world with some gleaming steel and glass towers there in the midst of it all. And they brought... They brought a bunch of Congress people over, Democrats and Republicans alike and members of staff, and they wined them and dined them and put them up in highfalutin, fancy schmancy hotels, probably the ones that even some that have the toilets, that the high-pressure toilets that squirt a little water on your bottom after you're done going. No expense was spared. And whilst the members of the Congress of the United States were there, why, they gave them little trinkets, like crystal stemware sets and china plate and rugs. Rugs. The Congress people all got two rugs. No, they didn't send a special orange one home. No, this is 2013. Quit it. Now, when you say a rug or I say a rug, you know, I'm kind of plebeian and I'm thinking something you wipe your feet on when you come in so you don't track mud through the house. It's West Virginia. We have mud. But no, we're actually talking about carpets. You know, the kind of woolen carpets that 90-year-old women go blind weaving or whatever you do to make a carpet. The kind of thing that used to be referred to as a Persian rug. Yeah. And so the Congress critters came back home and they said that they had checked it all out through the ethics committee and the ethics organ. Oh, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, go ahead. It's being fronted by a nonprofit. You're not being... It'll be fine. Well, it turns out that it was, in fact, a giant fraud that was actually a lobbying effort on the part of the state oil company of Azerbaijan. SOCAR, I think, is what it's called. And SOCAR wanted them there because we're talking about members of the Foreign Relations Committee, things like that. Because this was also at the time when we were talking about, you know, sanctions against Iran for allegedly wanting to have nuclear weapons that we couldn't prove they were building, but we were going to say they did anyway because it made Bibi happy. He got a national security stiffy out of it or something, if he can even do that. So what they needed was an exemption from the Iranian sanctions, because guess who was producing some of the gas that was going to go through the pipeline that was going to be more palatable to Europe and help break the Russian natural gas stranglehold? Iran, of course. And guess what? After all the rugs and the dinnerware and the crystal and the gym cracks and whatnots and gimbals and doodads and it were and Grant Juan Hutenlack were passed out, they came home, and not once but twice they passed bills on Iranian resolutions, and both of them they'd always said, hey, oh, by the way, doesn't apply to all that gas that's going to pass through that pipeline that's going to be run by the state oil and gas company of Azerbaijan. They're home free. Now, if you're a member of Congress, there's a law that says you can't accept anything of $350 value or more from a foreign government or a foreign interest. And several of the Congress people, when they kind of got caught in this, said, well, I mean, I didn't even particularly like the rugs. I thought they were kind of ugly. I mean, I didn't think it was worth $350 or anything. I mean, a couple of them said, oh, I'm sending mine back. But one of them, a Republican, name I can't reach right off the top of my head right now, said, oh, I had mine appraised, and it came in at $10,000. So I gived it right back. Mm-hmm. Here's the fun part. Like I said, they each got two rugs. one of them was an area rug. But the other was described in the article I read as a simple prayer rug. Now, we're talking about, Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma, Republican, and Steve Stockman of Texas. He's not in the Congress anymore. He was, he proved to be the, I don't know. I guess you would call him the benchmark standard of corruption up with which the GOP will not put. He was corrupt and crazy and proud of it. Maybe he didn't grease enough palms. But anyway, it sort of grabbed me that there was a prayer rug involved, because you can almost see that, oh, thank you very much for coming. Thank you so much. We would like to award you an area rug and a prayer rug. Yeah, no, really. There are members of the Republican Congress who brought home Muslim prayer rugs. Sharia prayer rugs. They're probably secret Muslims now. I mean, isn't that one of those rules? They got all those secret rules over in the Islam where, you know, all you got to do is say Aloha snack bar and you're an automatic Muslim, or kind of like being dead baptized by the Mormons. Maybe there's a secret provision where if you've got a prayer rug, it doesn't matter if you pray on it facing Mecca or not, you're Muslim just the same. Sharia prayer rugs. Yes, as a matter of fact, Stockton Larry, I think that would qualify as an emolument or an ointment. Yes. And so, lo and behold, that report comes out, and the Office of Congressional Ethics played a role in it, because the House Ethics Committee kept looking over at the OCE saying, no, no, you guys can run along, we've got this. And the OCE kept saying, ha-ha. So it might be good to, but they backed off. Right? Yeah. Just makes you feel all proud and tingly, doesn't it? And of course, there was no mention in the article about the amount of damage done to, say, antiquities sites or anything like that, and the building of the pipeline. Nah, why would you bother? Speaking of antiquities, however, I did run across a story about one. Yeah, I've got a list of stuff I'd like to see. And one of them is Persepolis. And another is Susa. And another is Pasargadae. And I'm probably not pronouncing Pasargadae correctly, but with regard to Persepolis and Pasargadae, and Susa too for that matter, these are all ancient ruins within the boundaries of Iran, which I ain't never going to see. Persepolis was destroyed in a drunken riot by Alexander the Great and his marauders. But it was, at the time, certainly a place to see. It was beautiful. It was one of the two capitals of the Persian Achaemenid Empire. It was founded by Darius I, whose tomb inscription can still be read on a rock near, carved into a cliff. It's not like there's a rock. No, it's carved into a cliff somewhere near Pasargadae. But there's trouble with the ruins of Persepolis, because, among other things, climate change has caused a decrease in the amount of fresh water in the area, which have led people who live around there to drill or dig illegal wells, which has sucked out what little water was left, which has caused subsidence, which means that the ruins of Persepolis are literally falling in. And Persepolis is, by the way, a World Heritage Site. Well, scientists in Japan have signed on to come in and assist the Iranians with shoring up the ruins of Persepolis, which the Iranians are interested in doing, not merely for themselves, because being Shia, they're not much interested in anything that happened before Muhammad. But it is a great tourist draw, because as crazy as it may seem, other countries, people from other countries do visit Iran, and they do go to places like Pasargadae and Susa and Persepolis. And so when I read that story, I thought, Japan, helping out the Iranians. The first thing that came to mind is whether or not Bibi has stepped up to a podium holding a great big Warner Brothers Wile E. Coyote picture of a bomb to excoriate the Japanese for rendering aid to the Iranians in preserving a world heritage cultural treasure. I wonder, maybe Bibi could threaten. But you know what? I bet you Bibi doesn't have nearly the luck bribing Japanese legislators that he does American ones. So just a little something to ponder on a Titanic Tuesday. Steve knew where I was going. Two rugs, weekly toupee and Sunday toupee, huh? What? Steve said, I wonder what would former liquor supply officer Marion Pat Robertson say about the prayer rugs. Demon possessed, perhaps? No, that's only fuzzy sweaters. Worn by tight, fuzzy sweaters worn by demon-possessed women that are to be found at the consignment shop. Well, there's that, too. Asa says, allow me to be an asshole for a sec, Bob. Aren't the Japanese scientists better off shoring up their own nuclear reactor that's crumbling into the ocean? They've probably got a surfeit. I bet they had enough extra scientists to. I don't know that an archaeologist is going to be a hell of a lot of a help with the core on the floor nuclear disasters. Just saying. We got so many interesting things to ponder. And being as how it's Titanic Tuesday, how about this? Some polling data came out in the last week or so from The Economist and YouGov. And you know how when we talk about the election past, we can't talk. If you're a really solid, rock solid progressive, you can't talk about the outcome of the election as being brought on by anything except how awful Hillary Clinton was. God knows you can't bring up any. Cloak and dagger, cyber cloak and cyber dagger skullduggery. No. Well, God, it's only been Hillary. Yeah. Well, it turns out, according to this Economist YouGov poll, 46% of the Trump voters surveyed, and I'm not making fun of them here. This isn't funny. Of the Trump voters surveyed recommend sugarless gum for the never no. They believe, there's that word. They're convinced that the emails, the Hillary Clinton DNC emails, what have you, the campaign emails, 46% of them think that those emails contained documents or emails that discussed pedophilia and human trafficking. That's a lot. The Economist and YouGov got it into their heads to do this poll after the Comet Ping Pong Pizza incident in D.C., in which a Trump voter took his Freedom Protector all the way from North Carolina to Washington, D.C., shot up Comet Ping Pong Pizza, and then was not shot by Washington, D.C. police, but being white, was merely disarmed and arrested. Pizzagate. And, of course, the emails that began Pizzagate were part of a trove of stolen emails. Let's understand, they were stolen. That were passed on to that bold, bold defender of democratic openness and transparency, Julian Assange, and WikiLeaks, who then, exercising no discretion whatsoever, just dumped it all so that people like Alex Jones and people on 4chan and Reddit could turn it into Pizzagate. You know, the wild-eyed, hair-on-fire conspiracy theory that says that Hillary and John Podesta were running a child pornography, pedophilia, sexploitation ring out of the back of Comet Ping Pong Pizza. Mm-hmm. It all started with WikiLeaks. Well, it all kind of started with, you know, Russians hacking the DNC.
Oh, God damn it, they had it. The DNC had it coming. It was Hillary.
So that would be something around, what, 25, 26, 27 million people? Even after it was even after the whole Comet Ping Pong Pizza thing was completely debunked, according to the poll, only 29% of American adults are sure the allegation is definitely not true. 29%. That leaves 71% who are somewhere kind of just out there. It also, the poll did, looked into some other matters. Of Clinton voters think it's true that Russia interfered with the help of Trump. 80% of Trump voters think that the Russians are completely innocent in this and would never hurt the fly or moose or squirrel. And even now, right now, 50% of Trump voters remain convinced that it's at least probably true that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. I know.
But Hillary.
Yes, I get it. I get it. I get it. And so we're 17 days away of finding out what a Trump administration looks like, feels like, smells like, acts like, nukes like. This is no time to not have a bottle of cheap tequila and a swirly straw somewhere nearby. Uno. Megyn Kelly has a new job. I know you've been worried about her. I know I have. Poor waif. She walked away from a $20 million offer to keep on doing whatever it was that she was doing at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Instead, according to her publicist, she's going to leave Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, and instead take on a new job at The Blaze. No. No, Tommy Lawrence already got that locked down. Oh, she's got a new multi-million dollar gig at NBC News, having been wooed by NBC News Chairman Andrew Lack. Wooed, yes, is the word used by the New York Times in this story. She's going to have a triple role. She'll host her own daytime news and discussion program. She'll anchor an in-depth Sunday night news show. And she'll take regular part in the network's special political programming and other big event coverage. I wonder if they'll have enough guts to sit her down next to Rachel Maddow or Lawrence O'Donnell or Chris Hayes. Now, if they don't want to pay out Roger Ailes kind of money, they won't let her. Tweety anywhere near her. The pants tingling will rise to levels that'll set off seismographs. Seismograph? Why, the move will herald a seismic shift in the cable news landscape, where Ms. Kelly had become the second most watched host after Bill O'Reilly of Fox News and often helped define the national political debate. It looky, okay? You You can take the harpy out of Fox News, but you cannot take the Fox News out of the harpy. What we have here is more than ample proof of the foxification ongoing of the rest of the for-profit media. No word on what her annual salary will be, but it was said that there was no way NBC could match the $20 million that Fox was offering. As the Times says, the Sunday night program, which is yet to be named, would provide Ms. Kelly with a continued hand in hard news. For his part, Mr. Lack at NBC said,
Megan is an exceptional journalist and news anchor who has had an extraordinary career. She's demonstrated tremendous skill and poise, and we're lucky to have her.
But you can have her, or you can have credibility. They chose her. Mm-hmm. So NBC is going to get so much newsier to watch, right? No, me either. Oh, it's about 7 minutes past the hour, so I might do well to offer up a quick fundraising update. Remember, we've got Shirley's Challenge on the table this evening. And we're off and running. We've got a nice start. Thank you very kindly, Colin, in Illinois. And thank you very kindly to Charlie in Tennessee. With that, we've only got $140 more to go on Shirley's Challenge. Carol Baker noting, congratulations to Megyn Kelly for leaving Fox and joining NBC. She's a great journalist who taught us that Santa is white, women's rights are important, but only as they pertain to herself. Yes. Important women's rights for women who are named Megyn Kelly. But yes, Santa, by God, is white. Like Jesus. Okay? Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, we've got a ton of stuff this evening. Absolutely oodles of stuff. And, of course, your conversation, should you choose to engage in it. And you are mightily welcome to do so. You know how to do that, right? Area code 304-663-4676. That's the stress line. 304-574-8178. That's the other line. And from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, Bob Kincaid Horn. Get you right into the program. It is just that easy. You can catch me over on Facebook, Bob Kincaid. You can get Twitter, Bob Kincaid. Right, all of that. So here at 10 minutes past the hour, with me having over-filibobstered by about 10 minutes, let's take a little break. And see if anybody wants to talk, or if I should just continue to filibobster. Works for me either way. This is listener-supported, emphasis on the listener-supported, Conversation Radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back.
We've been driving around from one end of this town to the other and back, but no one's ever seen us.
No one's ever seen us
driving our Econoline van, and no one's ever heard of our band. We're the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, Appal, and Gilgamesh. Then they wouldn't understand a word we say, so we'll scratch it all down into the clay. Half believing there will sometime come a day someone gives a damn, maybe when the concrete has crumbled to sand. We're the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. The Mesopotamish sun is beating down and making cracks in the ground, but there's nowhere else to stand in Mesopotamia. The kingdom where we secretly reign, the land where we invisibly rule as the Mesopotamians, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. This is my last stick of gum, I'm gonna cut it up so everybody else gets some, except for Ashurbanipal, who says my haircut makes me look like a Mohenjo-Daro. Ashurbanipal, I'm a Mesopotamian, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh. We're the Mesopotamian, Sargon, Hammurabi, Ashurbanipal, and Gilgamesh.
Hey man, I thought that you were dead. I thought you
What's not to love? They might be giants. The Mesopotamians. Never gets old for me. Okay, so about 14 minutes past the hour, and, I mentioned last night the upcoming confirmation hearings for Attorney General nominee Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Well, like I said, it's going to be quite exciting here shortly. Those confirmation hearings begin next week. So last night when the question was asked, how do we prioritize who we oppose? Well, some of that is already being done. Because even as we speak, the NAACP and its Alabama branch have occupied, if you will, the Mobile office of the said Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. The NAACP has stated, as a matter of conscience, the NAACP has chosen not to remain silent on this critical matter. Our main concern is centered around the reality of voter suppression. We've found no evidence of his ability, Sessions's, past or present, to be impartial and unbiased as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States of America, especially in the areas of civil rights, voting rights, and equal protection under the law. This, according to Hezekiah Johnson, head of the Birmingham NAACP. Other sit-ins are beginning to take place in other offices around the state of Alabama, with the NAACP being the rallying organization. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, by the name of Sarah Isger Flores, responded in email with a statement. Now remember, Trump says we're not supposed to use email. We're supposed to use a courier, and you know, lick the envelope real good, that we, because that way nobody can hack it. Sarah Isger Flores said, "Jeff's Sessions has dedicated his career to upholding the rule of law, ensuring public safety, and prosecuting government corruption. Many African-American leaders who've known him for decades attest to this and have welcomed his nomination to be the next Attorney General." Yeah, okay. On the other hand, Mr. Hezekiah Johnson said, "We live in a democracy." No, we don't. "And we have elected political leaders. Donald Trump was elected as the president of the USA, and he has the right to appoint the person he wishes to be considered. But we're still all Americans, and we should be factored into that dialogue for the final deliberations." Well, good on him for standing up. Oh, and this, just real quick before I go to the phones. I hate not to report it when there's a case of an outbreak of economic anxiety. The story comes out of Lake City, Florida, from New Year's Eve. Army veteran Joanne Perkins, talking to WJAX, said she and her family's house burned down. Because her oldest son left the stove on while nobody was home New Year's Eve. Accidents happen. She's having a tough time of it. Her six-year-old little boy is suffering from and battling leukemia. So when they got back to try to see if they could salvage anything out of the smoking rubble of their home, the front of her home had a racial slur, as it's being reported, scrawled across the front of the house. Another wall bore the words "Trump 17. She's got daughters as well. She said, "I won't let the girls come back here because I don't want them to see. This is 2017. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it." The Red Cross is giving her the family, they're providing the family with funds for a hotel room for a week. After that, though, they're on their own. Mama said, "Nothing in me is going to allow me to give up. I'm tired. I am, but I'm not giving up." What a... Well, but there's a lot of economic anxiety in America, and that leads people to sometimes scrawl racial slurs on the burned out homes of people who are trying to care for 6-year old children with leukemia, because that's how we make America great again. Mm-hmm. Let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob, how you doing? I was clearing my throat there. I hope that didn't come through.
No, it didn't, and it would have been okay if it had. I probably would have given you a cowbell for it.
Well, I was in the midst of it when you went to the phone, and I had the mute on. Well, anyway, that's neither here nor there. Punky says hello.
Yes. Hey to Punky.
I was thinking about Jeff Sessions. You were talking about a little bit yesterday, the nominee for Attorney General. And many, 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 many moons ago, I worked ever so briefly, this is back in the late 80s, marketing mutual funds and insurance products as investments. And in order to do that, in the area that I was in at the time, the Kansas-Missouri area, you had to be licensed to offer these for sale, okay? Which meant that you had to know a little something about insurance, the nature of insurance, using insurance products for investment vehicles, and also mutual funds, what they are, how they're comprised, why they might be of value to an investor, by way of spreading the risk, since you're dealing with a basket of companies that you're investing in, as opposed to picking individual stocks and taking your chances that way. But had I stuck with it beyond the year or so that I was involved in it, both of the states, Missouri and Kansas, that I was licensed in, required license holders in this area to take refresher courses from time to time so that they would stay current on the rules and regulations concerning the marketing of mutual funds and insurance products for investment purposes. Now, I say all that to say this. My little preamble has a point. And the point is, Jeff Sessions, in addition to being a senator, is also a lawyer by training and profession.
He absolutely is.
He was even a judge at one time, if I'm not mistaken. Or was being...
No. He was U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Alabama.
Right. So he was attorney.
He was Attorney General of Alabama. Right. And then he was nominated to be a U.S. District Court Judge, and that nomination was derailed by the Senate because of his proven, I mean, it's not even challenge, his proven racism.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. I was a little fuzzy on the detail, but I knew that he would have been a judge had his nomination not been derailed. Now, my question is, whether you're practicing or not as a lawyer, I am almost positive that lawyers, whether they're practicing or not, and I'm sure Rick could probably answer this better than me, wouldn't they have to stay current in terms of these refresher-type courses?
Yeah, what you're talking about is continuing legal education.
Exactly. And one of the questions that one of the people on the Senate Judiciary Committee needs to ask, among many, to Mr. Sessions, is how current have you remained in your study, in your continuing legal education? And if he hasn't stayed current, then as the chief lawyer for the country, he would have no business being the attorney general, in my humble opinion.
Well, I think there's probably little doubt that he has because the CLE requirement is relative directly to one's license, and that is all run let's say you're licensed to practice in the federal courts and the federal appeals court and the Supreme Court of the United States, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still, your continuing education requirements are going to be established by the bar of the state where you are a member of SAME. And it is surprising. There are a lot of different ways to get your CLEs. Now, there are, well, for instance, in West Virginia, since there's only one law school at the university, what you'll find is that there are CLE seminars on every football Saturday up at the College of Law, which is right next door to the football stadium. And what your CLE will also enable you to purchase a couple of tickets to the game, and those tickets happen to not be in the nosebleed section, but are pretty sweet and pretty prime, you know, pretty much 50-yard line seats. So there's an incentive to go up there and get your CLEs that way. But you don't have to. There's other locations, other places. You can get them online. I mean, it extends almost to the point of there's a sort of draw spunky, not punky, spunky. draw the pirate, draw the turtle, you know, the back of the matchbook CLEs. So while I understand what you're getting at, Scott,
yeah,
I would say it's probably a pretty sure bet that he's going to be current. If his law license is current, it is presumable that he is current.
Okay. Well, it just sort of came to me last night after I sent you an email saying that we probably should prioritize, you know, the top five or six nominees for these.
And are you okay with the three that I mentioned?
Yeah, I'm fine. I actually last night on my Facebook, I posted six of them under the heading, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, and even gave a little capsule description of what this six that I picked would be like and why they shouldn't be in any proximity to power. It was Sessions for Attorney General, Scott Pruitt for EPA, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, Betsy DeVos, Secretary of Education, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, and Representative Tom Price, who has been nominated to be the Secretary of Health and Human Services, which is...
Aw, dang it, you left out Zinke at Interior.
Well, see, here's my problem with that. With, you know, a dozen or more key nominees, I am more than likely okay with giving a blanket opposition to all of them. But it might be a good idea to pick the battles, A, on the basis of the most notorious, horrible ones, and then also based on the ones that we might have a halfway decent chance of blocking in one way or another.
I think this is stressing Punky out, I'm just saying.
No, he's bitchy because I'm not paying full attention at him.
Okay.
I'm talking about important stuff.
He's an important bird.
Well, he is.
But let me add a little soupçon into the mix, and that is, of course, all of these different nominations, the confirmation hearings are going to take place in different committees.
Yeah.
So you're going to have an entirely different set of significantly different set of senators for each set of hearings. And
yeah,
so
well,
you're kind of also going to have to look and see, hey, where do we have Democrats who are doing anything other than struggling to find enough spine to hold them erect in their seats?
Well, that's one of the reasons I posted this thing last night after you talked about it a little bit and gave me some inspiration on last night's program. But also, today was the big swearing-in day for both the House and the Senate. The Congress is a couple of weeks ahead of the executive start.
By operation of necessity, because they keep the government running.
Yeah, and they will probably, in this what remains of this week, if they haven't already gotten a good idea of what they're going to do, is pick the people who will serve on these various committees and subcommittees that will do the nomination processes for all of these nominees for these key cabinet and related positions. So, yeah, I'm sure that'll be posted somewhere where you can look at the key committees and find out who's who and what's what, and then have a better sense of who our allies are, if any. Because they have to be, the committees have to be bipartisan, although I don't think it's like the FCC, there's usually an equal number of Democrat and
Republican. No. None of these committees will have an equal number of anything. They will all be Republican majority committees, which means that barring one of them risking the waking up with an orange horse's head in his or her bed, there aren't going to be any Republicans breaking ranks. I mean, the for-profit media are notorious for positing, this Republican could break, or, that Republican. They never do, Scott. They never do. And just to revisit what I said last night about all of this, part of the pick your battles thing is, where do you think you could, as you look at each one of these, where do you think you're going to wind up with someone who is probably a lot worse? Now, for my money, I think I would put a lot of effort into stopping Rex Tillerson. One, he sounds like a televangelist or a comic book villain. Two, he has no government experience whatsoever. He is not a diplomat by any stretch of the imagination. And, next, maybe at the top of the list, he is in an active business partnership with Putin, for God's sakes.
And not only that, a big chunk of money was denied him when the restrictions went up against Russia.
Yeah, he has a vested interest in seeing those sanctions lifted. Rex Tillerson, even though he'll be retired from Exxon, he's got a ton of unvested stock options.
Yeah.
If those sanctions are lifted, Exxon stock value increases and he gets richer, even though he's no longer, part of the team. It's the same thing. It's the same thing that we dealt with in the context of Count Dicula and Halliburton. Even though he was no longer with Halliburton, his actions affected Halliburton value, which in turn directly affected his wealth.
Well, and going back further than that, but of the same error, was who was the Defense Department guy? Rumsfeld.
Rummy.
Okay.
Yeah.
And some years before that, he was hooked up with Searle, the big company, I think in St. Louis or Illinois somewhere, that came out with that stuff called NutraSweet, that artificial sweetener, which has some interesting health consequences if you use a lot of it. So you know he was getting that. Was it Searle or Monsanto? Because I know that there was some connection between those two companies at some point.
Oh,
I want to
think Searle.
Yeah, okay, maybe it was Searle. But no, Rummy was like a big honcho for them when he was between government jobs, because he had been in Ford's administration, and I think he was an advisor of some sort way back in Nixon's era.
Oh, he and Cheney go back to Nixon. They both learned their filth craft at the feet of the almighty god of filth, Richard Nixon.
Yeah, yeah. who is in the news again, as you were discussing last night. And those figures that I sent you, by the way, the 21,000 some odd additional names on the wall in Washington, the Vietnam Memorial Wall, those numbers came directly from the Department of Defense. So they're fairly reliable, I would think, because if anybody should know how many body bags were ordered, you know, the DOD would likely be right on top of knowing that. But anyway, well, I had that thought about Jeff Sessions, because to me, unless he's current in his understanding of law, because in his pronouncements, and if you go back further, his practice of law, at least in terms of black folks and people who use marijuana, he's a little off the twig there. He's a lot off the
twig. Well, let me at least prepare you for what the defense will be. Why, he's the one who broke the back of the Klan as Attorney General of Alabama. You'll hear that. But, of course, the response to that is, yeah, and he only did that because he decided he didn't like them after all because they smoked the marijuanas.
Well, elaborate. How did he break the back of the Klan?
Let me pull it up here so that I won't speak wrongly.
Because the last time I heard, the Klan was doing pretty well. They were their membership, I'm sure, is in an uptick mode.
It certainly is. The Weekly Standard, which is of course a disgusting right wing rag.
Yeah.
Claims that in 2009, and this article is by Mark Hemingway. In 2009, Sessions himself told me that when I got to Washington, there had been an orchestrated campaign to smear my record, and it was executed with great care. And I, frankly, was a babe in the woods and wasn't sufficiently prepared for it. That's fine. As a U.S. attorney, he filed several cases to desegregate schools in Alabama, also prosecuted Klansman Henry Francis Hayes, son of Alabama Klan leader Benny Hayes, for abducting and killing Michael Donald, a black teenager selected at random. He insisted on the death penalty for Hayes. And he followed through as attorney general, making sure he was executed. And the way it's described here, this is the sentence as it reads. The successful prosecution of Hayes also led to a $7 million civil judgment against the Klan, effectively breaking the back of the KKK in Alabama. Now, that makes it sound like maybe Sessions had something to do with the lawsuit against the Klan.
No, that was...
Morris Dees.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. But
Southern Poverty Law Center.
Exactly, exactly. And as far as if that's their defense, that he broke the back of the Klan, which he didn't. But in the case of prosecuting the son of the Klansman for murdering the kid at random, since when is it a time for a pat on the back for doing your fucking job?
Yeah, you want a cookie?
I mean, that's the least that one might expect if you're in the post of attorney general.
No, but goddammit, if you're a Republican, Scott, and you do and you actually can be compelled to do your damn job, no, you get a gold star and a cookie and a big blue ribbon.
Well,
but the other thing that he's done is try to torment civil rights activists. Among other things, he prosecuted a former aide to Dr. King on allegations of voter fraud in Perry County, Alabama, which is one of Alabama's poorest counties, and consequently the place, you remember when we had the big coal ash dam break around Christmas time a few years back up in Kingston, well, wherever, northeast Tennessee, and it all floated down the river. Well, when they gathered up all that massively poisonous toxic waste, they transported it and to Perry County, Alabama, and put it in a landfill, and now the poor, mostly black folks who live around that landfill are suddenly cropping up with, oh, look, you've got cancer. But anyway, that's Perry County, Alabama. And, you know, Sessions never should have brought the case in the first place. It was tissue paper thin. And I believe a jury heard it and went, get out of here.
Well, he was guilty of doing what Republicans always do, and that is sending out that dog whistle phrase, in this case, voter fraud, knowing that he's going to rouse the rabble and look good, you know, even for trying, even though the whole enterprise is shot down simply because he doesn't have a leg to stand on legally.
Well, yes.
People have no discernment. I mean, and it's a big argument as to whether they're willfully in that category or it's has just happened over time without them. Like, the concept creeps up on them like those cheap Fruit of the Loom shorts, you know? But
By the way, when this is another part. You talk about taking credit for doing your damn job. How about when you take credit for a job you didn't damn do?
Well, there's plenty of that going around.
Because, yeah, I prosecuted Hayes for the no, he didn't. He wasn't anywhere near the damn courtroom. An assistant U.S. attorney or an assistant prosecutor did that trial.
Sounds like he was Trump before Trump in terms of tuning his horn. Oh, I sent you a thing with a new name for Trump. Where'd he go? President Tangerine Jizz Trumpet. That's the new nom de plume for Mr. T.
Mr. Trumpet, are you carrying around any of that, what you call your walking around money? But, and like, you know, like I said last night, Chris Cope, so the confirmation process is a loaded one. Let's remember, if he was sitting on the federal bench, he would not be getting nominated to be Attorney General of the United States. It would be some other slimy right-wing POS.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to get some ideological freak into every one of these offices. And so while I proudly stand here saying, you know, I say resist, we also need to understand that there's resisting with a purpose and there's resisting for the sake of resisting. And I endorse both, but I don't want people thinking that somehow or another, if you stop Sessions, you've won something.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there's always going to be some nut bucket in the wings that's second or third on the list. But if the first one doesn't work out, the other one will work equally fine. And the whole point of this post that I put up on my Facebook with the names of these and descriptions of these six nominees, I also included a link so that if people for some reason weren't aware of how to reach their U.S. senator, their U.S. congressperson, or even their local representatives by telephone or postal mail or email, I included a link at usa.gov that basically gives everybody from your top representative in the U.S. Congress all the way down to local officials, and you type in your zip code, and it tells you all the information in terms of the various forms of contact. And this is the thing. I mean, how does the resistance show up? In what form does it show up in? And to my way of thinking, it best shows up by, you know, getting off your butt, turning off the TV for 10 minutes, sitting down, gathering your thoughts and sharing them in a coherent, polite, yet firm way with your two U.S. senators in the case of these confirmation hearings and your U.S. congressperson in the case of other shenanigans that may be going on. Because to the extent that people can make their voices heard, like imagine, close to 3 million more people voted in popular vote for U.S. president for the Democratic candidate than did voters for the Republican candidate. If just those 3 million people take the time to contact their two senators in opposition to some of these asshats that have been nominated by President-elect Tangerine Jizz Trumpet, it may not change a damn thing, but at least they'll know we're out there and we've got our eye on them.
Well, look, and here's another element to it. For instance, the NAACP is organizing the resistance by way of sit-ins in Sessions' office in Mobile and other places in Alabama. You know what would be great? It would be great if some white folks showed up. It would be great if some environmentalists showed up. It would be great if some women's reproductive rights activists showed up. It would be great if some LGBTQ activists showed up. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Oh, yeah, because taking it to the streets is an excellent way to dramatize and to shed a little light on the fact that people... See, there's a lot of ways to be upset and pissed off and frustrated and angry, okay? We saw how some of it played out by way of the election back in November. But another way, which has been tried and true for all of my lifetime and further back than that, is actually putting yourself and your time and your body and your heart and your soul on the line in a meaningful way, you know, to let them know that you will not be bamboozled or steamrolled in this enterprise of theirs.
But what I'm getting at, I think, in a larger sense, Scott, is that a resistance that understands that all these individual rights struggles are actually the same struggle is a manifestly more powerful resistance.
Oh yes, yes.
And by the same token, when the environmentalists show up for something that matters to them, it'd be great if the LGBTQQQ community showed up. It'd be great if the black civil rights activists showed up, so that we stop having to I hate the word fight, but we stop having to fight all these fights pre-attenuated for easy defeat.
Well, yeah, and that's an excellent approach, because if you look back, and I've had the most experience with anti-war demonstrations, and when I say demonstrations, I'm talking about the big ones from 69 in D.C., when we had upwards of 500,000 people marching down Pennsylvania Avenue in the two Vietnam moratorium demonstrations in October and November of 69. If you look at the newsreel films and the historical documents and photographs, you'll see banners from many different groups.
Well, it's interesting you would mention those banners, because what I was about to say is, please don't bring your Save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgin signs. Okay. Please, you know, please don't bring your messaging about your particular issue. Let's say I were to, because somebody said, "Here, Bob, go, you know, here's enough to go to Alabama and sit in Jeff Sessions' office. Let's say I'm going to leave my mountaintop removal signs and banners home. Okay?
Yeah.
It's solidarity is one thing. Trying to ride the back of somebody else's issue is another, and the latter is odious as hell.
Yeah, and the signs and banners that I was talking about were basically identifiers to let people who were observing these things, whether it be the news media or whoever, know that it wasn't just a bunch of long-haired, smelly, dope-smoking, hippie-freak kids.
Now, go easy on the hippie punching.
Well, I was a long... I'll send you a picture of me back in those days, or pretty close to those
days. Weren't holding a martini glass with three olives in it, were you?
No. And you must have had a little bit of that cheap tequila, because there were only two olives, Your Honor.
I'm multiply olives. I'm an olive guy.
Okay. Well, maybe there were three. Maybe I had too much by that point, but...
Sounded like a fine martini, I have to tell you.
It was quite good, and the trick to it... See, last New Year's Eve, I got this bargain brand, on-sale, grocery store vodka, okay? And I couldn't find the vermouth that I wanted, okay? I didn't even have a shaker. I basically had a Tupperware thing... A Tupperware shaker that you make pancake batter in with a baggie over the top of it and then the lid of the thing, because it wasn't exactly tight for this purpose of being a martini shaker. I didn't even have a shot glass. I used an old NyQuil.
Well, in so many ways, when making martinis, an old NyQuil measure is an appropriate measure.
Well, yes, but this year I said, well, wait a minute. That, you know, it was messy and it didn't taste good. Let me do a little research and find out what a good vodka is and what a good vermouth is, what the proportions are, what the preparation is, get an actual martini glass and an actual shaker.
Not a gin guy, huh?
No, I've never been a big fan of gin, other than the card game. And even that, I haven't played for years because Punky keeps dropping the cards. You know,
well, his little beak can only hold so many.
Well, he's okay at drawing. His beak action is okay for drawing cards, but holding his hand in his claw is just a nightmare. You know.
Yeah, and if you try to poke holes in the cards for then it's no fun anymore, because you know you can
well,
cheat.
Yeah, and plus, you know, about an hour and a half into the game, he's either shit on the score pad. Or the chips, or the snacks, you know, and who the hell needs that? But anyway, God, how did we get on that?
Well, olives, you know.
Oh, yeah, but anyway, I was a long-haired, hippie freak kind of a guy who back in those days, let's see, in 69, I would have been 14 or 15, thereabouts, okay? Had long hair almost to my shoulders. Used to spend my Saturday afternoon selling copies on the street corners of the old Washington Free Press underground newspaper or the Quicksilver Times newspaper. Found out later that the Quicksilver Times was heavily infiltrated by CIA types. So I'm sure my name's on a list somewhere.
Well, you've got a note in from Brother Deacon Asa.
Okay.
He said, you two are killing me with the martini talk. I'll have to get home and do a couple of pickleback stat. Now, do you know what a pickleback is?
No, I don't. Does it involve pickles or gherkins?
It involves pickle juice.
Ooh.
Now, the fact that Brother Deacon Asa was reminded of picklebacks because of our martini talk makes me wonder if he uses gin or vodka for them. Around here, and I didn't know this was a thing, but I was introduced to it. Around here, the best pickle to be had, and these are not paid product placements, and I don't get free beer or sandwiches or fries or anything for it, but the best pickles are to be had at Secret Sandwich Society. because they make their own.
Those are always better.
And they've got their own proprietary blend of spices and stuff for their brine. And so people will grab a quick, you know, quart of brine before heading down to the little bar. And the picklebacks they do around here, they do with a shot of Irish whiskey and then a shot of pickle juice and boom, boom.
Okay. Well, and see, that's the other thing I did this year. My older brother, not the gun-toting Mark Levin-listening fascist brother, but my older brother, who's got a couple of viable brain cells to rub together, said to add about a teaspoon of olive juice from your bottle of olives to the martini, which I did. And for me, I found that the key was not to actually add vermouth. Put the proper amount in the shaker with the ice, shake the hell out of it or stir the hell out of it in order to coat the ice and pour off the excess vermouth, and then add your vodka.
Yeah, is that a dirty or an in and out?
Well, that's just a hint of vermouth sort of vodka vodka martini, and it worked better for me because it may well be that the cheap ass vodka I bought last year was not the problem. The problem was I added vermouth into the ultimate.
Yeah, because the vermouth can add a kind of an oily quality. And that's the only way. That's the only way I know of to describe it. I don't mean like it tastes like, but you know, there's a sheen, if you will. And by the way, just for future reference, the you know things like Grey Goose and Belvedere, you know, wildly expensive. There's a bargain basement vodka. Well, that's not bargain basement, but. It's an actual Polish vodka, and it's actually made from potatoes, not grain-neutral spirits.
Oh, wow.
And it's called Luksusowa.
Wait a minute. Let me write this down, because that Grey Goose is kind of pricey, boys and girls.
The Grey Goose will break your ass.
Yeah. But, it was very smooth.
Last I checked, this stuff comes in around $16 at my little store, and the fact that they carry it just amazes me.
Okay, and spell it for me.
L-U-K.
Yeah.
S-U-S-O-W-A. Luksusowa.
Wonder what that means.
That's Polish for luxury.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
And it's 100% tater smashins. And while I'm not a big vodka fan, as vodka goes, I think it's pretty respectable.
Okay, I'll try that out. It'll take me probably a while to, because I got most of my drinking out of my system in my 20s. Okay.
Yeah, but, for a holiday, I saw that photo and I was like, good. Scott's taking a break.
Yeah.
But
I do from time to time, but it's not anywhere near. I mean, I was a party hardy lad. I mean, see, because back then we were operating under the assumption, A, not only don't trust anybody over 30, but none of us thought we'd ever make it to 30.
Or we might just, it was the Cold War, so we might get nuked.
Well, exactly. And, my last birthday, I'm not only twice 30, I'm a couple of years beyond twice 30. And I wish I knew back then as a kid even a third of the stuff that I've learned since being a young, long-haired, taking it to the streets.
Well, what did Mickey Mantle's brother, father, grandfather, whatever, they all died young.
Oh, yeah.
And so when the Mick hit the bigs, he partied professionally as he played baseball. And later on, when it began to take its toll, he looked around and said, if I knew I was going to live this long, I'd have probably taken better care of myself.
Well, and he also got a liver transplant. That's how badly the party affected him in later life, as I recall.
But by the way, we have further product endorsement courtesy of Steve from Georgistan. He said, Luxuswa, that's how we pronounce it, Luxusova kicks ass. It's been a staple in my bar for at least 15 years. Bars, great minds. And Steve says, we got to get together and throw back a drink or two. That would be fun. But, yeah, that's good stuff. And, you start talking martinis, one of the first things that pops into my mind is the wonder from the early days of MASH, back when the writing was so very good, the line where Hawkeye walks into, like, the officer's club, and he says, I want a martini, Mr. Ho, a dry martini. I want a martini so dry I can see dust on the olive. I want my martini should be made in a room with nothing more than a picture of the man who invented vermouth. a dry martini is basically a glass of cold gin.
Yeah.
Or very dry martini. I like a little bit of the vermouth flavor, but I'm funny that way. Oh, and see, another endorsement. Asa says, I'm particularly fond of that Polish potato vodka. There's one that comes with a straw of fireweed in it. I have had that. I was told it was buffalo grass.
Now, what is fireweed?
Well, there's I don't see it around here, but there are vodkas you can get, and they're usually Polish vodkas. I remember it was one bottle was brought back to me a million years ago by Polish friends. It's a bottle of vodka, but it's just got this one stick of what looks like straw in it. And it imparts an amazing flavor. And I was told buffalo grass, but Asa says fireweed. But it's tasty, and I didn't know Luxusova did one of those. Because I haven't had that in probably 25 years, but it was amazing. So look for Luxusova. I think you'll be pleased.
You continue to broaden my horizons on many, many levels. All my life I've known what fire is. Most of my life.
Well, no, my horizons are getting broadened with fireweed. I didn't know that was what it was called.
I've known what fire is. I've known what weed is. But I know what buffalo are, and I know what grass is, okay? But this is my first experience, or first time I've
heard tell a fireweed. Well, if you ever see a vodka with a single straw in it, and I mean, I don't mean like, swirly straw. It's, just like a long piece of hay or dried grass.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be worth your effort. It's a beautifully unique flavor. By the way, you're getting fan mail. Jude writes in from the Great Northwest, I so enjoy listening to you, Bob, and Scott engaging in dialogue. It provides for me a breathing space. So good. And see, maybe there are people who, we don't have the market research and the demographics and the psychogram. I don't know what people tune in for.
Yeah.
And, some people don't like this, other people don't like that. It's not all going to be every... I'm not going to sit here and pull that St. Paul trick about, lo, I was all things to all people. But I do know this. In the midst of all the stuff that we do talk about, and, a lot of times it's a rogues gallery and it's a laundry list of abuses and insanities and offenses and horrors... But, once in a while we'll talk about the little things that just kind of make life worth living. And that's not to say that a sober life isn't. We've got a lot of people in this community who practice the 12 steps, do it very well. And this is in no wise an attempt to tweak or anything. Me talking about cornbread is probably an offense to people who have really awful triglycerides, and God knows how many vegetarians I piss off every time I talk about some bloody hunk of fucking meat.
Yeah.
But, I mean, pleasure. Maybe pleasure's joy. There's the word joy. Because it was Tracy who brought us the word joy in the immediate aftermath of the election.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, it's all about conversation, and in a way it's like a party. Everybody should bring something a little different to the party, because if we all brought spinach dip, it'd be a pretty dull party, you know? And having grown up when I did and where I did, you know, through the 60s in the outskirts of Washington, D.C., and being an activist kid, I mean, from my early years, I guess from junior high school on, back in those times, you know, I took seriously the notion, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And the strange thing is, having been brought up and going to Catholic schools most of my life, I took seriously what they told me that Jesus said about stuff and how people are supposed to show up in the world, you know, in lieu of those teachings and whatever example that Jesus provided. And one of the things that frustrates me and has frustrated me since the time of Reagan has been the idea, I mean, back in the 60s, in the wake of the civil rights activities and the anti-war activities and those amazing times, looking ahead to the extent that we could, we all kind of thought that things, that what we were doing and who we were being in those times would have benefits and we'd have a payoff later by making the world better than it had been when we found it, okay? And as we embark upon truly uncharted territory in the next couple of weeks, I'm rethinking that. Did anything we do actually make, you know, a damned bit of difference? I mean,
did the differences made make matters worse? I think you can go back I think you can go back and look at 1968 as a case in point. I mean, it was a horrible year to begin with. Remember RFK announcing the murder of Dr. King, the mm-hmm. aftermath of that. But then the aftermath, basically LBJ being forced from running for re-election, which he could have, and had LBJ run for re-election, you know what one of the things that would have happened would have been? And this is just, I mean, this is so far out there that nobody ever thinks about it. Medicare had only recently been passed into law, right?
What, 1965.
Right. Do you know what the original intent, I don't know that this is true. I've heard it's true. It makes sense to me that it would have been true. Because there had been a long, talk going back to the FDR administration about, the four freedoms that FDR talked about.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was freedom from want. Well, if you can't go to the doctor when you're sick, that's part of want. And the only way you have complete freedom from want is if you've got access to health care, which means you need universal single payer.
Right.
That's a conversation that didn't get invented 10, 15, 20, 25 years ago. One of the black marks on Dwight Eisenhower is that he was absolutely, thoroughly, completely convinced. He, who had seen the wreck and ruin of Europe and understood the necessity of why those states brought in universal single or some form of universal coverage, he thought it would be communism for the United States because he'd signed on with the goddamn Republicans. Okay?
Even though he knew from what he had seen that it was a building block in the rebuilding of Europe.
Right. In many ways, The Marshall Plan could not have been the success that it was if people had not been able to get access to the health care that they needed in order to participate in their own recovery.
And his predecessor, Eisenhower's predecessor, Harry Truman, I think in 48.
Truman tried again, and the goddamn Republican Congress stuffed him.
Bingo.
And then you know, Eisenhower administration, and there was, I think, too much stuff on the Kennedy administration was such an there were many different ambitious elements to that. So we do, but we do in 1965 we get Medicare. And like I, and what I was getting around to, Scott, is that what I was told and what I believe is that the intent of Medicare was never to stop at, you know, at age 65. I don't mean it stops at age 65. The intent of Medicare was, you know, a few years down the road, we'll move the eligibility age back to 60.
Yeah.
And a few years later, we'll move it back to 55.
Well, in other words,
and a little bit later, we'll move it back to 50 until you've expanded it to the point that it's Medicare for all, like we talk about now, and it is universal single-payer health care. Now, one of the things that happened when people started walking around with their precious little ABJ for president buttons, anybody but Johnson.
Yeah.
And the door got opened up for Humphrey and McCarthy and RFK.
And Wallace.
Wallace. Is that went away. And so by virtue of the, and you know, there's a certain allegory to be made to 2016 by virtue of the chaos and disgust and dissension and division among the Democrats. Why, hello, Dick. We thought you were gone, but you came back. Where's Checkers?
Well,
and you know, like from last night, you know, the treason of Nixon and the treason of Kissinger and the treason of everybody associated with him in making sure that 21,000 more Americans would die. All in its own way flows out of the principled resistance of liberals. Now, isn't that a shitty thing to have to contemplate?
Well, because a lot of people also forget in 68, or maybe they weren't around to know it, that after Bobby Kennedy was killed, a number of Kennedy supporters, not a great number, but a segment of the RFK supporters, actually for a time switched over to George Corley Wallace, who was a Democrat at the time, simply because of his populist inclinations. It really had nothing to do with...
God, where have we heard that song before?
Well, but it had nothing to do with his racism. It had nothing to do with his name-calling about you pointy-head liberals. It was the fact that on some level, at least when he was in local government in Alabama, he was an old-school populist.
Look, there's no law of nature that says a populist can't be a full-on, nasty-ass, pasty-faced, doughy racist.
Well, true, yeah.
and look, nasty-ass, orange-faced, doughy racist getting ready to enter the White House. I mean, George Wallace has a spit up his ass and an apple in his mouth in hell right now. But even around the apple, you're able to hear, if we could just dial up hell, we could hear the giggling. Him and Lester Maddox just cackling away.
Yeah.
And crackling, too, but, you know, that's a different matter.
But the point that you were going toward in terms of, you know, Nixon was really a reaction to the turmoil of 68. And if you ever get a chance, and it's online, I'll have to send you the link to it. every year back in those days, back when there was a Life magazine, a little after the first of the next year, they would do a retrospective edition of Life magazine, looking back at the previous year. And I've still got my copy of the one for 1968. And month after month, there was some earth-shaking event of national or international consequence every year. January, I used to know them by heart. There was the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, I think, was January. There was the taking of the Pueblo off the coast of North Korea, I believe was February or March. There was turmoil in the streets of Paris and other European cities in the spring of 68. There was the invasion by the Soviets of Czechoslovakia when there was a liberal democracy-oriented
Yeah, uprising. Isn't this about the same time that the Beatles are writing Revolution?
Yeah, around that
time. And if you go carrying pictures of Chairman Mao, you're not going to make it with anyone anyhow?
Right. April was Dr. King being killed, and then the aftermath of the riots. May, I forget what it was. June, of course, was Bobby Kennedy getting killed. July and August were the two conventions, the Democratic and Republican conventions, and so on down the line. And then in December, we got our palates cleansed in a way when the Apollo 8 made the first mission to the moon to orbit it and read from Genesis and give us, incidentally, our first full-color look back at our little blue planet where all that madness had unfolded for 12 months that comprised 1968. I'll send you the link because you're a little younger than I am and don't maybe remember it the way I did, but I remember it, and each month was like one new horrific, atrocious thing, and we felt we were coming apart, you know? We talk about being divided now and fractionalized now. You know, the current day, in its own way, doesn't stack up in terms of terror, shriek, stark terror.
Can you imagine 1968 with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram?
Oh, Jesus!
Because that's part. I think that's part and parcel of what really contributed to the angst that attended all of this business this past year is the fact that it has become inescapable. You know, there's the French just passed a law about absolutely forbidding workers from being connected to their place of work for certain hours.
Yeah,
because there's a recognition. You gotta disconnect.
Well, I think the word that we're looking for is the relentlessness of our jobs for those who are working, or our ongoing political process. It has been relentless, and it's not. I mean, it's bad enough that the goings on, the coverage of them through all media, has been relentless. But then you add to that the layer of fake news and add to that the layer of people who are ill-informed and misinformed and uninformed to begin with, and you shake that up in the big old martini shaker of life, and it shouldn't be surprising.
And the next thing you know, you've got a mess.
Well, and it shouldn't be surprising that shake it up, pour it out, and it turns out Trump. You know, a tangerine martini, okay? I mean,
please quit it. Stop ruining tangerines for me. I freaking love tangerines, okay?
Okay, all right.
Yeah, what do you call a person from Tangiers?
A tangerine, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and there was an old song back in the 40s, Tangerine.
And it got revived, didn't it?
Well, it was appropriated in the 60s by a competitor of Metrical, the diet, the Metrical for Lunch Bunch, the diet milkshake for weight-conscious people, Seago. There she goes. She's a Seago girl. to the tune of the song Tangerine. But
Tangerine, wasn't that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't
forget
make,
who sang.
Don't make me look it up. Somebody will send it to me.
Okay.
Scott, this has been a delightful conversation.
Well, it always is. Usually, I mean.
And I'm sure there was something, but now the larger point I was trying to make is the the law of unintended consequences.
Oh yeah, well the fact that Nixon was the natural reaction to the turmoil of what happened in the 60s, and
right, and also. The argument is there to be made because you can find it in the history. Well, you know, Hubert Humphrey was a terrible candidate.
Well,
and
so was Hillary, but look at who they
but
were
look
both
at who
against.
The alternative was.
Exactly. And I guess if I'm going to leave the folks with a thought, it would be this. You know, and it fits in with everything that we've said so far. Now is definitely not the time, you know, to perceive ourselves as being powerless in the matter of what's next, okay? Merely voting every 2 or 4 years is simply not enough. The moment that we are currently in are screaming as loud as it can for our personal engagement in whatever this process is and however it shows up, however you show up in it, because ultimately, it's going to affect us all, okay? The very least we can do is let the two senators know if they're sitting on any of these committees for the confirmation process or will be voting if these nominees make it to a full Senate vote. The very, very least we can do is let our two senators know how we stand on these various nominees. I mean, that is the very least, and we should be doing more. Like you say, showing up for sit-ins, those of us who can. And
to add to the sort of, you know, let's mix our voices together, let the people who are most directly affected do the leading, okay?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the biggest lessons that comes out of Standing Rock.
Yeah.
I've seen it at work in other places, and I say that because, well, there's a lot to think about today. Today is the 6th anniversary, not to be a bummer, but it's something we think about here. Today is the 6th anniversary of the death of my dear friend and mentor, Judy Bonds, who died well before her time of cancer, and was not a smoker. And she lived and grew up and lived in Marfork Holler and breathed coal poison all her life. Mm. And probably ingested it in just about every other way a human being can take something in through their body. I mean, you know, the largest single organ in the body is the skin. And it comes in, and it and the associated chemicals come in that way. And she breathed it, and she probably drank it in the water because her family had a well, and the water table was tainted. Judy died six years ago today with the words on her lips, "Fight harder." But one of the things that happened, I don't know how many other hillbilly women from southern West Virginia there are who got an obit in the New York Times when they died. Judy did. And I was proud as punch to know her. I loved her dearly.
I will look her up.
Julia Judy Bonds, B-O-N-D-S.
Under cause of death, you may as well say apathy on the part of people who knew better and failed to do enough.
Yeah, the science that we have now was only just beginning to come out back then. But noting her passage, I would be remiss if I did not also note, Scott, within the context of our conversation, that she, and she knew it, okay? She was so used. She was so exploited. She gladly lent her voice and her face to the Sierra Club, to Appalachian Voices, to the Natural Resources Defense Council, to anybody who said that they were interested in stopping this ongoing, not just environmental, but human rights crisis that takes place and is still taking place. I don't care how many self-congratulatory articles are written about how coal is over, is still going on today. And instead of coming in here and following the lead of natural leaders like Judy, people like the Sierra Club and the Beyond Coal Campaign and Appalachian Voices, came in here and said, now listen here, you hillbillies, we're the smart people, we know how to do this. Y'all just sit quietly, and when we tell you to get up and talk funny or dance, dance, damn it.
Jesus.
And guess what? It didn't work, Scott.
Good.
Well, no, I mean, bad. Their tactics didn't work. Because Judy and so many others did what they were told. We've done what we were told.
Oh, well, I'm sorry about that then.
On the other hand, if you look at Standing Rock, suddenly, and maybe because of what lessons learned here, you don't have the Sierra Club running out there and saying, now see here, we know how to... No. And the same thing with Keystone XL. There was a lot of organizing done by 350, but it was the people who were impacted by the Keystone XL who really led the fight. My friends up in Wisconsin who stopped a 20-mile-long, half-mile-wide, 1,400-foot-deep mountaintop removal job on the shore, through the shores, near the shores of Lake Superior, and through some of the most pristine, beautiful water you'll ever know in your life. They stopped it cold, and they did it because natural, local leaders did the leading. And so when I say that other voices need to be added to the mix, it is voices that are following, not voices, not artificial voices coming in, trying to lead and then turn around and sending out a fundraising appeal, promising a canvas messenger bag, just like the one that John Muir carried into Hetch Hetchy, except for the fact that this one is made and was made in a sweatshop in China by some 12-year-old chained to a fucking table.
Mm.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get up on my soapbox about that, but.
No, that believe me, it all fits in the conversation. It truly does, because
the days of, hopefully, Van Jones, who began as an activist in his own right, and because of his brilliance as and at the time youth, rose rapidly through the ranks and wound up in the Obama administration until Glenn Beck convinced him to throw him under the bus. My God, he's a commie. He said the other day, the era of the Clintons is over.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I read that and thought, well, I hope you're right. But, because I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine, I don't think they're over. And, well, it's kind of how I feel about 2020. I will believe that Hillary is not interested in running again when Hillary stands up and says, I will never run again.
Well, it's like being on Facebook and you get in a heated discussion with somebody. I have found that as wrong as anybody could possibly be, I should always afford them the opportunity to have the last word, even though I know that I can top it. Because in my topping it, they'll come up with another last word. okay? And like, I'm saying that to agree with you that 20 is just a couple of years away in the grand scheme of things, and we may not necessarily have heard the last of Hillary, but I subscribe to your retreads theory wholeheartedly, where she needs to enjoy her grandmotherness and look at back at what she has done in her life.
Dandle the babies on her knee. And
exactly. I mean, you know, there's, but so, I mean, there are people in life who want the last word, who want, you know, they'll go at it one more time. She's free to do that, but we're all equally free to say, well, that's interesting, and pick somebody else, you know.
Well, yeah, and I kind of mention all this because no matter what a horror show this Congress is, I fully expect that the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act will be reintroduced. And, you know, I'm intensely proud of that act, because that law, that proposed law, only came into existence, Scott, because some of us got tired of sitting around waiting for the smart people to come up with an answer, because they kept refusing to come up with an answer. So we went and did it ourselves. But for some reason or another, you know, hillbillies.
Yeah.
So but I'm sure we'll be talking about that soon. Scott, thank you so much for the conversation. I didn't mean to keep you on longer than perhaps you wanted, but the conversation kind of demanded it, and that it went in that direction.
Well, Bob, it's always a pleasure, and you hang in there. You have a wonderful day. We're getting closer to the big day, and I will be weeping quietly in the corner.
And somewhere along the way, we got to figure out what we're going to do that day.
Well,
I have no desire to even stream it online and watch the synchronized burning cross twirling team from Sister Fist, Alabama, march down Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, see, I'm of two minds on this thing. As long as I've been a thinking person old enough to know what the hell's going on, starting, I guess, January of 65, well, no, in a way, January of 61, I have vague memories of President Kennedy's inauguration, because it snowed like hell that day or the night before. But my first clear memory of an inauguration was January of 65 for LBJ's. And I have not missed any of the inaugurations on TV or radio, mostly TV. And I don't plan to miss this one, because in order to know what to do next, you got to know what's been done, you know? He'll get up and he'll speechify. That should be interesting. there may be a drinking game in it. You know, for those of us who need a drink that day, there may be a hellacious good drinking game in his inaugural address. We'll have to orchestrate that, because I got plenty of vodka and I'm not doing anything that day. That should be fun.
Oh, dear God, I can't even contemplate it. I mean, what would the terms be? Every time he says, oh, Bigley. See, I mean, that word already goes through me like W saying nuclear.
Well, he's already said that, you know, one of the reporters asked him about, you know, the preparation for the inaugural address. Does he have his people working on it? He says, well, they are, but I'm really working on it myself. Well, good Lord, Agnes. What?
Yeah, I know, with his purple crayon in his tiny little hands.
Yeah, and his big boy, Big Chief tablet, you know? With the chip,
I'm sure it'll be the best address with the best words, beautiful words.
Well, if you want some fun sometime, look at a side-by-side comparison, and I'll let you go, but look at a side-by-side comparison of Kennedy's inaugural and Nixon's first inaugural in January of 69.
Oh, I'm sure that's I'm sure that sends your eyeballs straight back into the back of your head.
And tell me what you see. Tell me if there wasn't some strong rivalry between. Well, we know from history that there was.
And it's you know, there's a lot of downward spiral from there. Take the Kennedy inaugural and put it next to the George W. Bush inaugural.
Oh, God.
Oh, mother. Yeah. Scott, have a good one, my friend.
Okay, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
See ya.
Scott and his little friend Punky calling from San Diego. Good conversation, too. 25 minutes before the hour. And thanks go out to Joan in Tallahassee, who just took our $140 fundraising goal down to $76.63. Thanks, Joan. Thank you very much. $76.63 to go in fundraising for the evening. And a reminder, we welcome new subscribers. If you'd like to just do $10 a month, set it and forget it, just click the little box and do the stuff and you're done. So thank you. Thank you very kindly. Who could this possibly be? Let's find out. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
Well, Thomas, I've been worried about you.
Why have you been worried about me?
I don't know. You've been a little grim on Facebook lately.
Oh, that.
Oh, that? Okay.
Yeah, that's family stuff.
Oh, that's, okay.
It's personal and yeah, but otherwise, I you know, it's one of those where I got a lot of friends who are sick, and unfortunately, it's not, you know, sick in the head, just getting sick.
Oh, it seems like half the people I know right now have some bug or another. And, of course, I just had one.
Yeah, and today, I'll give you my tale of woe. I'm lucky enough to be one of the, and we've talked about this before, I'm lucky enough to be one of the recipients of the Affordable Care Act, which...
Same here.
The chimpanzees want to take away from me. And, well, I am probably going to be leaving my doctor because apparently my therapist doesn't know when I have an appointment. And that kind of scares me.
Aren't they supposed to?
Yes.
I don't mean scare you, but aren't they? No, I don't mean aren't they supposed to scare you? Because a lot of them do. But aren't they supposed to know when you're coming in, or is it? Wait a minute, you're not treating with the Psychic Friends Network, are you?
No. No, I'm not. I'm not. Miss Cleo has not been dialed up. We dealt with her on New Year's. No Dionne Warwick. No. I have this. And the sad thing is, I really love my therapist, but the network. Like the community health center that she's with apparently can't get their crap together. And I don't know if it's because they've thrown everybody who is on the Affordable Care Act on top of them, because like my appointment was canceled without my knowledge or consent. And then I couldn't get another appointment until the end of the month. Right?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so this wasn't my fault, and I'm going to get screwed anyway, and I've already not seen you for a month. How is this helping me? You know what I mean?
Bootstraps, Thomas, bootstraps.
Yeah, I know, right? So, I mean, it's like I'm already getting a feel for, like, what the Republican care is going to be like. You know?
You're not, because you don't have no care at all yet, because that's what the Republican care is going to be like.
Well, that is true. I did have that for like 10 years. And with a leaking heart valve now, that'll be fun. Yay.
No way to get that taken care of before they can screw you?
Working on it, but probably not knowing the way they're going. Though, if anything, my only hope is that we have backlash like the backlash that we saw with the ethics thing that happened today, that turnaround was so fast. I thought I was going to get whiplash.
Yeah, but you're not trying to fool yourself into the notion that they're done with the idea, are you?
No. Oh, no, no, no.
Okay,
they're gonna
just checking.
They're going to paper cut it now. They see what their biggest problem was. They did it too damn quick. They did it. When Sarah Palin was giving that speech in front of the news crew, and they were killing that turkey right behind her, they were that showing everybody what they were doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
That was the problem. If nobody knew what they were doing and nobody found out, this would have just slid by. You know, and the whole Trump, you know, drain the swamp tweet thing, I just thought was hilarious. And because it's like, who are you trying to fool? You want this more than anybody. You know,
he needs it.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly.
But the thing is, within the meanings of the Emoluments Clause stuff, what Trump is going to need is his own special dispensation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can he pardon himself?
No reason why not.
I mean, I don't think there's anything in... I mean, Dr. Bill isn't here, but... by the way, he's on Saturdays at 7 on FYI Nation, by the way.
Oh, goody.
Double check that, but he is on the weekend. We have
and he's back this week. We had programs yesterday and today, and I presume tomorrow.
Okay, cool. So then I will awesomely update that because I try to get the most recent ones for when we replay him. So we do replay him during the week. So
well, he started into some. This may predate you, but back when he first started. People like me and our buddy Jack in Shreveport noted that, you know, Dr. Bill is reasoned, and he's cogent, and he just and he's so genial, and he just makes these little points, and the little points pile up, and the little points pile up, and the little points pile up, and then the next thing you know, they're an axe handle, and they're hitting you in the back of the head. And he did that today, and he's going to follow up with it tomorrow. And whoa, I encourage everybody to go and go to whiterosesociety.org and download Dr. Bill's podcast for today, or you can also get it at podbean.com, podbean.com. Look for the Virtual Center for the Study of the Constitution and Civic Responsibility. Just put Virtual Center in, it'll populate.
And you and I have to get together at some point to talk about iTunes.
Yes, I so desperately need to do that. But
I'll tell you what, Bob, I wouldn't know how to do this if it were not for Brad Friedman. And I got to give him all the thanks in the world. Brad and Desi are...
Oh, they're lovely people.
Nicest people in the liberal talk world that are amazing. And he's been out for a little bit and because of of everything, and it's just they're awesome, and they're on our network, and I'm glad to have them in the morning. And I'm not trying to promote or anything. I'm really not.
No, that's okay. That's okay.
I you know, they are just so amazing, and I wouldn't know how to, because I couldn't tell my ass from an RSS feed. And I knew you needed one, and I was like, how do I do this? And I had, you know, I wanted to do it for the longest time, and I sent a little note over to Brad, and he helped me out, and it was a great help. So I'm more than willing to help pass it along. Because,
well, I mean, we were there for the longest damn time.
Yeah.
But it somewhere along the way just sort of disappeared. Don't know why.
Yeah, but I Apple's weird, but then they're a little tax evasion bastards too. So that doesn't, you know, make me feel filled with joy when I talk about them either, using their products. But no, I just wanted to call you and say hello. And I am glad you were worried about me. That's appreciative.
No, I fret. It's my job. I think it's hardwired.
And you being sick too, by the way, worried us. You know.
You so don't want this. I mean, I'm still. I think I'm okay, but I'm not. It started and then it stopped. I mean.
I'm not one who usually gets sick.
I'm not very prone either, really.
Yeah, and if I do, I get ill. Like, I get ill. And that's what I'm worried about, especially if I lose the Affordable Care Act.
Well, once they take my care away, it was kind of nice. I've had some hellacious pain because of my gut problems. But if I have to go and get it, I mean, it was traumatic, and I got frustrated. It's okay. But if I have to go and get another zit on my pancreas popped, sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely.
Disgusting.
Sure.
Yeah, if I have to do that, well, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah,
it's just not gonna happen.
And
here's the question. Because, I mean, it's you, it's me, and it's some tens of millions of other Americans, okay? That's the thing. I mean, how many stories have you seen? I know you've seen them. I've seen them about Trump voters now worried that Trump may take away their health care.
Yeah.
Okay? One, and I got to thinking about it earlier today, Thomas. In many ways, I live my life in a state of constant conflict. Not because I'm out there, you know, fighting or arguing or getting into bar brawls or anything like that, but because I live in a place and progressives who live in blood red states can probably identify with me on this more than people who live in happy, happy blue states.
Look at Michigan. Detroit and Flint, but that's...
I live in a state of constant conflict because on the one hand... My heart goes out.
Yeah.
To somebody who is finally getting, say, diabetic care that was gonna like keep them from losing their leg below the knee. But while they still had two legs to walk on, Thomas, they went on November 8th and they voted for a man who told them he was gonna take their health care from them. And yeah. Now they're worried that he's gonna do what the fuck he said he'd do.
Exactly. And by the way, and not for nothing, even if he moved heaven and earth to stop them, Speaker Ryan, Miss San Rand himself, will not listen. Because he wants to do it. You know? I mean,
and I'm pretty sure they're not going to let Trump have a veto crayon.
Yeah. And that's the part that gets me the most. It's like you literally shot yourself in the fucking kneecap and you're crying to us about, you know, the freaking there's a right-wing story about because of Keith Ellison, the Muslim Brotherhood taking over. I mean, are you fucking kidding me? The DNC can't get their shit together. How are they going to take over anything?
Oh, Jesus Christ! They couldn't organize a riot in a phone booth.
I mean, come on, they couldn't find the phone booth.
But that goes back to something I was going to say a minute ago. We're talking about tens of millions of Americans getting their health care taken away from them. Now, not everybody is too sick to protest. Who's organizing for the tens of millions of people to surround the Capitol and not let anybody in or out until they promise to leave the Affordable Care Act alone?
Right.
Because, I mean, yeah. You know, we in this post November 8th world, you know, we have to find a way to reach out and get our kazoos and play kumbaya and put our hands out and reach toward those poor, misunderstood, economically anxious Trump voters who just voted for change. All they wanted was change. They just wanted, I mean, it's been 8 long, tormented years of having a in the White House, and they just needed change. And yeah, he was black, but now, and we're still not going to have a white man in the White House because this one's orange. But they just wanted change. And if ever there was a moment for that, if there was an issue for that moment of outreach, this is that, Thomas.
No, absolutely.
I will gladly lock arms. Oh God, I can't believe I'm saying this. I will gladly lock arms with a Trumpanzee if that Trumpanzee wants to keep his or her health care as badly as I want him to keep his or her health care.
I agree.
I'll lock arms with a retired coal miner worried about losing health care. I goddamn sure will.
I did.
Now, we might have a discussion about some other things later, but if we can manage to not be completely overrun with Benghazi Tourette's and can just focus on making sure that sick people can go to the doctor when they're sick, we might actually accomplish something.
Well, and not only that, I mean, I did a story, I don't know if you saw it on Talking Points Memo the other day, where the Montana Speaker of the House is worried about the some 200,000 people that they have on the healthcare rolls now and what they're going to do once the Affordable Care Act goes away. And this is a Republican speaker worried about how they're going to take care of them. And what they're going to do once the Republican Congress actually does whatever scary ass thing they're going to do, you know? I mean, it's not as if they didn't tell us ahead of time of what they were going to do. And it's not as if we weren't told from the jump what they were going to do.
Yeah, this is part of the genius of John Roberts, though, Thomas. You're going to have a hard time getting people in Wisconsin or Alabama or, you know, Kansas to march because they're not in. I doubt if they're inclined to march something they were never allowed to have.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But in Michigan, where and I call him one tough douche because he is.
Yes.
One tough nerd, Rick Schneider, Rick the Dick, he gave us the expansion. And I got to give him credit for that. And he was a Tea Party guy. And that is a tremendous surprise, but I think he did it because of Flint and Detroit. You know, and not if it was just the rural areas, I don't think he would have necessarily done it.
Yeah, no, because there wouldn't have been any incentive to.
Exactly, and then the same goes for as Nikki Goldenheart calls him, Governor John Kasich, same reason. If it was just the rural areas, he wouldn't have given Medicaid. I'm not going to even give him that much credit. It wasn't his, you know, Catholic belief or anything. It was the fact that it was a political expedient move for he has more than just rural areas to worry about. So he gave the expansion and caught flack for it. And, you know,
communist.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's why you didn't see them as Veep choices. That's why you didn't see it, well, except for Kasich, but he turned it down, supposedly. I don't know why you wouldn't want to be king for a day. Why wouldn't you want to be king for a day, Bob?
Well, I can't. Exactly. Doesn't everybody want to be? So, yeah.
But I just wanted to call in and, you know, say hello and happy new year. And I am thrilled that you're back and feeling better. And I hope whatever you have stays away. I know Jules Frazier, just so I know a lot of Horton listeners listen to Jules's Morning Jules's show on our network. And we've been playing Stephanie Miller because she's been out. She should return, we're hoping, on Monday to get the old Claire to return on Monday. Like I said, everybody needs to take a little break, and she decided that it was better to take a little break, and we had Stephanie Miller, and she's, you know, lover or hater, she's still a good liberal, and she'll still fight Trump just alongside with us. And we play her in her spot until Jules gets back. And as soon as Jules gets back, she'll be back at 10 a.m. And as long as she wants the spot, because we adore her. So I just wanted to also let people know, in case people were wondering where the hell Jules was. Because I know she hasn't been on for the past couple of days since she was on our New Year's show. So,
Oh, cool. I appreciate you doing that.
I wanted to let that know. But I hope you have a good rest of the evening, and I got to do my show. So
yeah,
and
only a couple of minutes from now. Thomas, good to hear from you. I'm glad my worries were ill-placed. And we'll talk soon, I hope.
Definitely. And we'll talk about the iTunes as well.
All right, cool. Later. The one and only Thomas from FYINation.com. It is time to get out of here. This is one of those where did the night go kind of things. Good conversations, both. And maybe at some point in time, I'll try to find us an expert to talk about what is referred to in movement activism as self-care. Because one of the with 4 years, maybe eight, possibly 12, maybe 16 of this staring us in the face, it's going to be very, very important that the people who are out there, who are willing to put their bodies on the line, understand what goes into, not only goes into the activism, but goes into not letting it eat you alive. Yeah, yeah. So it really is. It's time to get out of here. Thank you all for a lovely evening. We will close. Thanks very kindly to Anatole in the chat room. We will close with a fundraising goal of $26.63. Hopefully that will go away in fairly short order. And we'll just be passing the plate for the regular, ordinary evening's fundraising goal tomorrow evening for prayer meeting Wednesday. Okay? Thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you who keep this going. I'm proud of what we've accomplished here over the years, and I really do want this to be a home for the resistance going forward. And you're the ones who make that happen with your contributions. We run on a shoestring. We really do. And you're the ones who keep us supplied with shoestrings because they break. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. And thank you, moderator Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And you are remembered, Judy Bonds. You are remembered. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody.